Good morning, planet Earth. Good morning. I can see you. You can see me by the walnut tree. Whisper kind words as the wind blows. As the sand goes, so does time and space. We're here for the human race. We're not a disgrace. It is Tuesday. It is August. It is the 25th day. It is 10:23 a.m. here on the Olympic Peninsula, motherfucker. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? Summer's almost over. And I have to go back to work at the Gorglamak factory where we produce mungazoids, also known as Scriblin, also known as Wandering Folk, also known as Monitor Lizards, also known as Komodo Dragons. We give them training. They fly to Spain. They learn to ski. And then they become the heroes. Heroes for you and me, baby. Those fucking Komodo dragons. Here are some headlines, or rather important front page articles for ZeroHedge.com. At the top is the paid for shit. How do you put gold to work? You can't. Macroeconomic data is really a tool. You're right. You're a tool too. QTR. Fidelity Fund doubles down on Pornhub. No. On concerns. No. Fed credibility. Yeah. AI story's not dead. CIA Director Ratcliffe went to Moscow. ICE is investigating Ilhan Omar. Guggenheim loan craters. Treasury IRS proposed rules on Trump account investments. Ghislaine Maxwell to rotten prison. Going through some pain. Dick's Sporting Goods smashed. Most on record as Foot Locker bets goes limp. Canada retaliates. They won't sell us maple syrup. They won't sell us maple syrup. We can't have pancakes. This is terrible. Can we all go travel to France now, you fuck? Citadel Securities warns Bessent's financial repression plan shifts pressure. Fuck. Trump admin proposes new $100,000 for me, for Dan. Thank you, Trump. Send me the check. This is my place of business. Fuck you. Bessent's real plan. Trigger a massive Treasury CTA short squeeze. Well, that sounds like a brilliant fucking plan. Rabobank, Bessent's buyback looks a lot like a hooker. The next AI bottleneck isn't chips, it's biology. Top Zelensky staffer has big boobs. New home sales collapsed. Oh my god. Markets will punish Warsh for a Jackson hole, or maybe give him a rim job on the side. The AI race is global. The veto is local. U.S. home prices are rising at their fastest pace in a year. Oh, wow. These articles about the housing economy are really contradictory, folks. Oil falls further as U.S. prepares the return of diplomats to Mideast embassies. Oh yeah, it's all fixing itself. The world is healing. Because Omega Force controls the Hormuz Strait, we control the Red Sea, we control the Black Sea, we control the Yellow Sea, we control your mom, sea. Yeah, and that's the fucking news, right? You fuck. I don't know, folks. So I watched this documentary about the poop cruise. If you don't know, the poop cruise involves the Carnival Triumph that got stuck for a week in the Gulf of Mexico way back when. I think it happened in 2013, right? 2013? Whatever. Yeah, 2013. They got stuck. And the poop built up, and the food got scarce, and people got sick and lived in a tent city. And I think about the United States right now, and if you want to go all Hanlon's razor bright side and come up with the best rational interpretation of your best case scenario, you're on the poop cruise. I mean, it's a big ship. It's got many passengers. Some live in Ohio. Some don't live in Ohio. On this big ship, we got a big hole. We open our crack pipe. We smoke a bowl. We're on the poop cruise. Trump is captain, but the poop is piling up, folks. It's really piling up. 'Cause you live on the poop cruise. Except this poop cruise doesn't have a happy ending, folks. I mean, the other one, they get rescued, they can go poop. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I don't think this has a happy ending. So I am not going to read the screenshot of a post that President Trump made. I put it into the notes. There's a lot of crazy shit in the notes for this podcast. You take a look if you want to. Whatever. I'm going to ask you to suppose that it's possible that Trump is as real as Biden, is as real as Obama, is as real as Bush, which means to some extent these are real people, but to another extent they're managed. And it's reasonable to suppose that none of these critical decisions related to your life, to my life, to the survival of life, that none of these are really related to Trump. I mean, I have no doubt he's the front guy. He could be, in the sense of the witch's walk, truly, truly, truly a useful idiot, a tragic buffoon, a Falstaffian buffoon. Trump could be the person he claims to be, but he could be, you know, he could be a person also who's being led down the wrong road by a nose ring. And you could argue, well, Dan, that's because of Epstein. Maybe. I don't know who or what Epstein was. What I'm pretty certain of is that all the versions we've gotten so far are probably false. I'm pretty certain of that. So whatever Epstein was, I doubt that organized pedophilia has stopped. I doubt, let's just play logical for a second. Do we really think there would ever be just one Epstein, one Ghislaine Maxwell? So whoever, whatever Epstein was, these organizations are manifold. They are diverse. They are, I think, mostly products of each country's deep state. You know, blackmailing people has also been in the playbook of clandestine warfare for thousands of fucking years. It's not a new thing. Honeypots, blackmailing, setups, these are not new things. They don't require computers. They don't really require technology. They often require a believable witness, but you don't need digital media to have a believable witness. You just need a bunch of country bumpkins that will believe any fucking thing. Yeah, so you read it if you want to. It's stupid. He's beaten up on Marjorie Taylor Greene. He says traitor Greene. He's beaten up on Thomas Massie. I think of this as a trauma monkey, as a limited hangout. And as far as Thomas Massie and Marjorie Taylor Greene, traitor Greene, whatever go, I'm not big fans of these people either. You know, these politicians, they'll say things that sound great. If you're in the liberty movement and you hear Thomas Massie, you'll think, oh, he's a great guy. But he's one of the people that keeps the stupid shit going. And I'm sorry, that's how I feel about Ron Paul too. You can say, well, Ron Paul is, you know, he's a straight shooter. He's a straight shooter that has managed to keep the political system going. He really is. If Ron Paul had divorced himself from the voting thing decades ago, it's possible we would be looking at other choices. But instead, we get the same dreck over and over again, and people say, but this year's hero, he's not a zero. His name's Obama. His name's Trump. He's old Grandpa Biden. Hey, old Grandpa Biden. Yeah, old sweet. Touchy, touchy Grandpa Biden. Let's move on. So here's a quote from Dr. Freckles that we'll talk about a little bit, because we will. If the arcane but important story of 2019 was repo crisis, this year's arcane and important story is crack spreads. Now, I gotta be honest with you, when you read a headline that says crack spreads, I immediately see a picture of Dave Chappelle. And so I put a link to one of his video shorts dealing with the subject of crack. But it's not related to crack cocaine or freebase. It's related to essentially one of those ratios that a refinery can use to determine if they're making money on the production of some particular crack, which means some particular distillate. And the one that matters, folks, right now, the one that's really important is diesel crack spreads. And the diesel crack spreads don't make sense, which means at some point in the near future, the price of diesel is going to spike. Could be this week, could be next week, might even be after the election. It seems unlikely, but we don't really live in a free enterprise economy, so it's hard to say. A lot of the shit that Trump says sounds a lot like 1984 George Orwell bullshit. You know, Choco rations are going up this week. Next week, everybody gets more victory gin. It's the same kind of stupid bullshit, and it's hard to know what the real truth is. It really is. But I'll tell you, I suspect that this is a real story that they're trying to obscure with a lot of arcane rhetoric. And the bottom line is this, folks. Everyone loves gasoline. Everybody loves their plastic. But whatever you love about modernity, much or most of modernity for the last century has run on diesel. And you can say, well, Dan, my cell phone doesn't need diesel. Well, you're probably right, right? That would be dumb. But it does need diesel, because every component of that phone goes on a truck. Every component gets shipped. Every component gets mined. And that's a crap ton of fucking diesel. All the food you eat, that's diesel. The tractors running out there, yeah, more diesel, I think, in most cases. I don't think John Deere runs on gasoline, but maybe they do. Ask a fucking farmer. Chances are, almost everything that enables modernity in terms of logistical support is running on diesel. The emergency generators that a nuclear facility like Fukushima would have tapped into if their generators weren't spunked in 2011 run on what? Diesel. That's right. The emergency generators that can keep the turbines turning so you don't have a fucking meltdown after you've scrammed the reactor, those things run on diesel. Okay? And despite all the techno rhetoric from DARPA, and DARPA has a lot of bullshit rhetoric, they'll tell you, we're going to have an electric tank in a couple years, a nuclear-powered tank. They'll tell you we'll have reactors small enough that they can be on the battlefield. All of this may or may not could be true, but right now, every single military on planet Earth runs on diesel or some distillate that is going to become very expensive and scarce very soon. Again, folks, you got to be careful, because a lot of this stuff could be manipulation as well. So you just got to be careful. Next topic. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. If there is someone in your life that guilt trips you about for being poor, you don't need that person. Well, I don't know if this is one of his better quotes, but it's worth talking about. I have noticed a pattern in the media, especially since 2008, that if you are not rich, if you are not making money and trying to make more money, if you don't have a nice house, a nice car, nice clothes, and of course, the same rhetoric usually eschews the subject of guns, isn't that funny? You won't see that for guns. None of the fashion mags will show you guns, but they'll show you every other stupid thing you can spend your fucking money on. If your husband or your wife doesn't have money, if they're not a positive person all the time, there's been this message of get rid of them. Get rid of them, mock them, force them towards the edge, push them out of the community, push them off the boat. And in recent years, I've had people tell me that they felt like they've been guilt tripped by people for being poor, for not having enough money, for being between housing, because maybe they can't afford, and even if they could afford, guys, a lot of these apartment complexes are asking for a monthly income that is three times the rent. Well, folks, I gotta tell you, in almost every place you live, most people don't make that kind of money. They don't. So a lot of this doesn't add up, and that's a separate topic. But yeah, there are people in people's lives. There might be somebody in your life who, I don't know, admonishes, chastises, and says really mean shit to you because you don't have money. And all I can tell you is, folks, I'm not going to tell you to ever get rid of a friend. And I don't think people should cut off family members, although, frankly, sometimes that happens on its own. From personal experience, you don't really cut them off. It's just that people drift apart, especially as adults. And we don't really have a society that values community or family anyways. So it's not that strange for families just to, every family, to be a diaspora at a certain point, and virtually impossible to bring it back together under normal circumstances. Under other than normal circumstances, like the circumstances since 2020, a lot of families are just broke. And by the way, if you want to know if that's in prophecy also, it is in prophecy. There you go. So I don't want to dwell on this, but you need to push back on people if they are telling you that you being poor is a personal defect. It is not. Okay? Is it possible that you made some bad choices and you ended up poor? Sure. But I can remember my dad's generation, and people like him and his friends made bad choices all the fucking time. My dad water skied through Deception Pass once. My dad drove a car, I think it might have been a brand new car, into a lake because he was drunk. And I don't even know if he got arrested because it was rural Washington back in the 50s or something. So really, come on. Did he get arrested or did somebody buy him another beer? Who knows? My dad paid cash to buy boats. Now, in reality, he shouldn't have. He should have bought Apple stock or Microsoft stock. This was the 1970s. If he'd had a good financial advisor, he could have taken that same money and put it into those resources, and who knows what would have happened. But that's what he did. And when money that he was making still had value, and I was a little kid when that started to change, by the way, when it still had value, he could make a mistake, and the mistake wouldn't ruin him. I made a mistake 10 years ago, and it ruined me. And it was a mistake about trusting the wrong person. It was a mistake about life choices in terms of what I should have done at that point. I was kind of in that panic mode after a divorce and looking for the brass ring. And so I was grasping at straws, like, how do I get my American dream, or whatever you want to call it, before I die, before everything turns to shit? Because, you know, 10 years ago, I kind of thought everything was going to turn to shit in about a decade. I don't know if I was on the ball or off the ball, but I figured it was about 10 years away, plus or minus. And it did seem as if any day things could have gone sideways. So we were in the window of collapse, in my opinion, the last decade or so. It's just that a lot of, let's call it good luck, has assisted in preventing it from occurring. It doesn't matter. I mean, ignore my bullshit, ignore other people's bullshit. But also, if someone is guilt-tripping you about being poor, ignore their bullshit. Next topic. Dan, if you're poor, you're bad. I know, and that's the message they want right now. Here's an article from The Guardian on the topic of poor people. Headline, hard to swallow. The future of snacking may be 3D printed cookies made from upcycled plastic. Yeah, upcycled plastic. This is written by Hannah Devlin and published yesterday. Cookies produced from upcycled plastic may sound like something straight out of dystopian sci-fi plot, but researchers say they have succeeded in creating such a product as part of a NASA-funded project aimed at feeding astronauts on future space missions. Huge. The technology uses specifically designed yeast to transform the plastics and agricultural waste into edible proteins, fats, and flavorings, the resulting slurry, oh, I love that word. If you're a listener, you know I love a good slurry. The resulting slurry is passed through a 3D printer to create a dish-shaped cookie. Wow, you need to check out the name on that faculty shirt, guys, because it makes more sense if you do. My lab works on developing technologies for plastic upcycling. Dr. Lahiru Jayakode, a microbiologist at Southern Illinois University Carbondale, who led the project, we thought, why not look into food? Plastic is carbon, and food is carbon. Therefore, you can eat plastic. The team are yet to receive institutional sign-off to taste the plastic-derived cookies, but report that they receive high marks on aroma. Wow. I'm going to stop right here. I don't truly know how much of the story like this you should invest any energy, if any. Like, you could go zero if you wanted to. There is a concerted effort right now to convince you that we're at the point, technologically speaking, where we don't even need to grow food. We can just make food. And there are a lot of people who will tell you we're almost there, we're there, we're so close, we will have factories making food, and we won't have to farm any longer. And for some people, that sounds great because they believe in that technological worldview and they believe everything will be solved eventually. Yeah, some people will eat the cookie and die. I will tell you straight up, folks, if you're worried about allergies, allergic reactions, you know, if you're worried about people going into anaphylactic shock, I'd be really fucking careful with these cookies. You know, it is not accidental that people, you know, often have reactions to food, even food that would be food they'd normally eat, but happens to be grown in a different place. Eating food locally isn't just good in terms of survival, folks. It's good for your immune system. Whether you like it or not, all the food is kind of garbage at this point. Okay, I don't know why they're doing what they're doing, but they're doing it every fucking day. And if you have eyes to see, you just got to look up. So the food you eat, I don't care if you garden it, I don't care what you do, is likely a little bit garbage. But you need to eat the right kind of garbage so your immune system doesn't kill you. And that's the key point. That's why it's a good idea to eat local food. It helps keep your immune system on the right track. All things being equal, people's immune systems are fucked. Now we got this cookie made from a laboratory process and plastic. And it says agricultural waste, but that sounds like poop. A poop cookie. Sounds great. Next topic. Poop cookies. Poop cookies for the poor. Oh, wow. Crack spread. So, we've already sort of beat up on the diesel issue, and I don't feel like scaring people today. I'm going to gloss over some of this. I have a link to an article or two about the issue of diesel. I think that a lot of the people online right now are, I do know how to phrase it. They're edgelords. They're sheepdogs. And you got to be really careful. They're going to tell you some truth. And then they're going to, it's like this Kilduff guy. He tells you some truth. And then he says, oh, but we'll defeat Iran soon. And it's like, okay, well, how's that going to happen? And also, you know, why do you have to link that to the overall issue of diesel? Let's talk about the main issue here. Anyways, folks, I think the diesel issue is real. It's always been real. The question is, are you being told the truth about the supply? Because if the supply is tight and becomes tighter for distillates, specifically diesel distillates, then a lot of things will go up in price. And I've said this and I'll say it again because you need to be prepared for it. The Trump administration, I don't think Trump's a real person the way we are, but the administration, meaning the puppets there, are following the orders to do everything they can, everything possible, to include Scott Bessent's Operation Epic whatever. What did he call it? It's not Epic Fury, it's Epic Steal Their Cash or something. But the point is, to include his stupid-ass project, Epic whatever, all of this can only weaken the dollar status eventually and catastrophically. And you could see very soon something people said would never happen or would never happen in our lifetime. I'll tell you straight up, folks, assuming the storylines that we're hearing are real, you could very soon see de-dollarization go viral. And if it goes viral, it's over. And then all of a sudden, it's not just about the diesel fuel, folks. It's also about the fact, and by the way, most of the oil we produce doesn't really help with the diesel problem. So if somebody comes back, oh, but Dan, we make plenty of oil. We don't make the right kind, shithead. And for all the magical projects out there, nobody's actually producing enough, shithead. So if you're going to come back to me with, oh, we make plenty, we don't make the right kind of oil. We don't produce the right kind of oil. It's one of the reasons why we, you know, invaded, quote unquote, or stole the leader of Venezuela. Because Venezuelan oil, although it's not ideal, is closer to the kind that we need. But the bottom line is we don't have access to the right kind. So the diesel issue is a big deal. And the only question is, when does it bite us in the ass, okay? There's a lot of stuff around the bond market right now. I would tell you that all of these things are probably connected, but the question is how? You know, Nietzsche used to obsess over the issue of causality because he believed something that was a bit radical, but not original because others had thought about it too, that we had causality the wrong way, cause to effect, when Nietzsche said in some cases it seems like its effect leads to cause. I'm not sure we're getting enough good information right now to be sure, but what it does look like right now is the beginnings of a monetary crisis. Does a monetary crisis guarantee the dollar crashes? No. But a monetary crisis does tell us that the period we're in right now is chaotic economically. And assuming central banks are independent actors, I don't think they are. I really don't. But let's pretend that the Bank of Japan and the ECB and the Federal Reserve and all these central banks are independent actors. Assuming they are independent actors, then it's really dicey what other countries would do. It looks like a lot of countries are dumping treasuries, folks. It really does. I was joking about moon bonds, you know, 10 years ago, more or less. A decade ago, I joked about moon bonds, monetizing the value of property on the moon and setting a maturity date of about, I don't know, 200 years. 200-year moon bonds. And you'd say, well, Dan, you mean you couldn't redeem that certificate, that coupon for 200 years? And the answer is yes, and perhaps even longer. And it sounds insane. But I originally thought about this because of what the Argentinians were thinking about 10 years ago. And that was 50-year and 100-year bonds. And if you know anything, I've said this before, if you know anything about modern economic history, the modern economic history of Argentina, the economic history of Argentina since World War II, you would know that a 50 or 100 year moon bond ain't going to work. That they're going to have one or two crises with their money within that window. So, yeah, I don't know, folks. Anyways, I have a link to a terrible, terrible article about a grandmother that left her granddaughter in her car while she was at work. And I don't want to editorialize on this. There's been this theme the last week about caring for children, and I want to talk about that a bit down the list here, you know, so we'll talk about it later. I have a link about that Jason Arday guy who got caught plagiarizing. Folks, having been in that world, and I was there 20 plus years ago, computer scientists have had the tech to detect plagiarism for a couple, like 20 years. So a lot of the plagiarism stuff that's coming out right now, saying, oh, it's because of AI. We've had the algorithms for doing it for about 20 years. You could have done it 20 years ago. The question is, why wait till now? Why wait until right now to actually start, you know, pointing out that some professor plagiarized? And my view is this seems like a kind of trauma monkey. It's hard to say. I don't really know. But you can have your own opinion on this if you want to. I worked on stuff when I was in school that used spanning tree algorithms to actually classify and group text. And there's stuff way more advanced that was developed back then and fairly efficient in terms of algorithmic complexity. So again, I don't understand this. Seems like bullshit. Next topic. So there's been some type of kerfuffle about Israel striking an air base in Syria that Turkey was preparing to use as some sort of forward operating base. Okay. In the 1990s, when I was training to be and then became an officer. So in the 90s, when I was in the Army, I remember reading this book. It was a book you would have found at like Barnes and Noble's back in 1995 or whatever. And I forget the exact title. I should probably just look it up. But it was essentially a big book containing multiple scenarios of wars, like where wars could happen, how likely they were, who the conflicting parties would be, and what would be the likely outcomes. So it was like, imagine you wargamed all the potential conflicts of the world in the 90s and then produced a book based on it. I don't have the book any longer. I remember reading it back then. And what's funny is one of the chapters dealt with Greater Israel, and it was considered a low likelihood scenario, which to me, for someone who claimed to be an academic or researcher in the 1990s or 80s, you know, because I think it might have been first published in the 80s. There's more than one edition of it. For somebody living back then and saying, well, there's no, you know, it's not very likely that Greater Israel will happen, it seems deliberately obtuse in retrospect. And yet at the same time, he goes through the scenario and then he says, oh, but it can't possibly work. I don't know, folks. I've come to think that just about every social scientist researcher in the United States is directly or indirectly controlled by the Zionist influence. And again, what that means is that AIPAC, is that the State of Israel? Is it all the above, folks? People like us don't get to know. I also think we need to be careful about this issue because it also looks like another case of three-card Monty, which means that from a PSYOP perspective, I don't think it's accidental that there's been this pushing of anti-Jewish rhetoric in the last year. This doesn't mean I'm defending the Jewish people or not defending them, but there is a clear theme of stuff that's being allowed through. And what's really funny is the same edgelords who will say it's all curated, it's all controlled. Those same edgelords will quote these articles and this stream of narrative that is what they said, all controlled. So again, I think you need to be careful on this narrative, especially given the behavior of the state of Iran in the last few months, because until they start lobbing missiles at Tel Aviv again, I have a hard time believing any of this is very real. Sorry. I mean, they could be launching missiles at each other, but real in that catch-22 sense, if you know what I mean. Trump has announced that he is going to give us 300,000 tons of ground beef. 300,000 tons of ground beef. That's about 4% of the annual consumption of ground beef in the United States. Now, again, he said 300,000 tons of ground beef. He didn't say 300,000 tons of prime rib. He didn't say 300,000 tons of steak or ribs. He said 300,000 tons of ground beef, that's 25% pink slime, and we don't even know for sure where it's coming from. There's a lot of stuff on the internet. Oh, it's coming from Argentina. It's coming from the trauma monkey, Zionist, whatever. You're just pushing the narrative. We don't even know if it's true yet, whatever. We don't know where it's coming from. It could be bullshit, folks. 300,000 tons of ground beef sounds like a lot. But I believe, personally, and I'm going to tell you this straight up, that they have been stockpiling food in this country for at least 2 decades. And I mean it. They have built huge warehouses all over the country to stockpile food. And this includes stockpiling meat. And if you keep it cold enough, if you keep it, you know, dry enough, if you keep it protected, you can stockpile ground beef for a long fucking time. At least, you know, 10 to 20 years seems reasonable at the right temperatures. It seems absolutely reasonable that you could do it, maybe even longer. So when people say things like, well, you know, 300,000 tons of ground beef might be coming, we don't know where or what it is. We don't even know if this is real. It's 4%. Trump has been lying about double-digit percentages since he's been president. Why wouldn't he lie about a single digit? So whatever, we'll see. Dan, here's another thing too, and this is where it gets gruesome, trigger warning, this is where I get a little gruesome, but here's the thing, there's a reason why it couldn't be steak or prime rib, or even any other cut, it'd have to be ground beef, because if you're starting to use people, you might see a tattoo. Oh boy. Or like a piercing. And if you get the ground beef and you find a piercing in it. Yeah. It's gross, folks. And I'm sorry. That's where we're at. That's where we're at. You know, just for the hell of it, I'm going to read Donald Trump's post. Today, I concluded a deal to substantially lower the price of ground beef for working American families. As everyone knows, under President Biden, beef prices soared at their fastest rate, and the American beef herd fell to its smallest size in modern history. As we work to rebuild this herd and help our ranchers, for the next 90 days, the United States will allow up to, and again, it says up to, folks, up to 300,000 metric tons of ground beef to be imported with no out-of-quota tariff. We have a commitment that this beef will be sold at 25% below current market prices. Well, okay, I don't know how that works, Joseph Stalin. This deal will reduce prices for Americans while giving space for our great American beef herd to grow again. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Papa Blumpity Clump, Bumpity Trump. Yeah, folks, let's use some logic here. Actually purchasing this money, purchasing this ground beef directly from the farmers in this country and then distributing it to people in need, like, for example, people on food stamps. You know, since people say people on food stamps need to eat healthier, well, guess what? One of the cheapest proteins, other than the mercury seafood, is ground beef for a lot of Americans. So if he was really serious about helping people, and again, I'm not a commie, so I don't want any of the above, but if he was really serious, he would simply purchase 300,000 tons from American ranchers. This is the thing that's weird and should piss people off a lot if this story isn't just a bunch of bullshit. It's a simple fact that you want to support the ranchers. If you want the herds to get bigger, they need money. They need support. And guess what? Chances are there's at least 300,000 tons of beef out there that you could turn into ground beef if you simply went to the American ranchers. So this is a lot of bullshit, folks. A lot of bullshit. Oh, here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. The business of government has always been augmenting reality. Augmented reality is becoming a big subject in the world of technology. It's not virtual reality. It's not reality. It's something in between. And it's not necessarily new. The military has been using something called a heads-up display in fighter aircraft for decades. Or at least since the 1960s and 70s, when the technology got cheap enough. And the heads-up display is like an augmented reality. It's not as, you know, as high-tech as it can get today, where you put on a pair of glasses and you look at somebody and Google does a reverse image search to get their name for you. It's weird and crazy, but that's where we're at right now. You can purchase glasses, you can purchase technology, where if you look at somebody, you can do a reverse image search. It's not that complicated. And whammo bammo, you found old Uncle Fuzzy Butts. Yeah. Governments have been abstracting inputs and outputs of economics for thousands of years. They have. In fact, you could argue that the agricultural revolution itself almost guaranteed the first governments, because it was one of the first big events in human civilization that sort of separated us a little bit from the travails of nature, where we moved from hunter-gatherer to being herders and farmers, where we could raise our own food, we could store food. So in lean years, we could listen to Joseph, we could listen to young Joseph and his electric dream coat, and if you were Pharaoh, you would set aside food, because the lean years are coming. So abstracting the brutality of existence and convincing you that they control the brutality, and if you're a good little boy or girl, you won't be brutalized. This has been the augmented reality of the state forever. And so it's not accidental that the government wants a lot of technology. They want a lot of cameras. They want a lot of data centers. I don't think any of this is meaningful between you and I. I kind of think this is the stuff. I compare it to Easter Island, but this is the stuff that civilizations will do at the end to try to preserve a bad idea. And all they're really doing is adding on more dirt and rock to bury themselves in. So anyways, next topic, Dr. Freckles. Yeah, here's another quote from Dr. Freckles. Once you remove from government everything it shouldn't do, there's nothing left. Folks, there are libertarians who will say, well, Dan, we need the courts and we need the cops and we need the prisons, right? And then there are some libertarians who will say, well, Dan, we have to have NASA because without NASA, and then I just want to just vomit. If you really think deeply on every single thing governments do, everything, firefighters, you know, managing the postal service, cops, everything, and you ask yourself, does the government really need to do these things? Some people will say absolutely, because they'll use the positive evidence that these institutions provide. Others will say absolutely not, because they look at the negative evidence that gets hidden. You need to look at all the evidence, and you need to ask yourself realistically, if the government wasn't here, would things be worse than they are for you, for your home, for your situation, for your security? Me personally, I think once you get rid of the stupid shit government does, there really isn't much left. And what is left, at best, is something that you should do locally. Not from some centralized state, but whatever. Too late, folks. You're not voting your way out. You're not reforming your way out. And I hate to break it to you, you're probably not going to use a civil war or a revolution to get your way out. I guess the good news is that governments are kind of self-imploding. They're such terrible fucking ideas, at some point they do just fail. So I guess you have that going for you. But if you're hoping that somehow people will rise up, listen, I'm as skeptical of the rise up scenario as I am of the reset, because they both sound like wishful thinking masked by some level of dread. But in reality, there is no dread, because in both scenarios, you're still getting fed. You are. The versions I get from, oh, but there'll still be food, Dan. Oh, yeah, I know. There'll be chips in it. And they'll monitor your colon, but there'll still be food. I don't think you understand how much they hate you. And really, how terrible a famine would be. But that's fine, folks. Next topic. It's boring. Famine's boring. Magical monkey viruses are so much more exciting. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. The closer you get to freedom in America, the more feds you meet. I believe this to be 100% true. And it might not have always been true, but it's been true since the FBI has been a thing. So for at least 100 years, if you wanted to actually walk the walk and talk the talk of freedom, there was a really good chance you were either going to meet an FBI agent or an informant. And I have encountered this myself. And you could argue, well, Dan, that's because you're over the target with things. And that's true. That's true. The voters are under control. The people that want to escape that matrix are getting closer to the target. But the closer you get to the target, the more anti-aircraft they have. And in this sense, plants and fakers and edgelords and other types of freaks. Freaks who will call themselves anarchists and then do absurd things just to ruin the movement. And there's more than a few of these freaks. And they're all over the place, and they tend to get all the oxygen in the room. They tend to get every camera, and they do a lot of damage to people who simply want to live free. So, next topic. Dan, yeah, I know. You want to hear something nice? Oh, is this misogyny? Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. The only thing lonelier than a man alone is a man with a girlfriend. The only thing lonelier than being at home at night and eating your chili out of an old can is to have a woman sitting there yelling at you, saying you're a pile of poo, saying your life is goo, saying you can't be true, saying you're not my boo. You You're not my boo no more because I'm seeing Jeffrey on the side. And he's pumping me. Yeah. The only thing truly lonelier for a man than simply being alone is to have a wife or a girlfriend. Damn, that's fucking terrible. I don't know. I mean, in a way it is, and I know that it's kind of bullshit and it can go both ways. If I'm saying that women these days seem like stinky piles of shit, well, guess what? A lot of men do too. All of us kind of seem like stinky piles of shit at this point. Enough of us, certainly. And that means that, you know, that's all you need is enough. And so, yeah, I don't think this is just about being a woman or being a man. But I do think the only thing lonelier than being alone is to be in a relationship with somebody these days, because chances are it's going to involve a lot of just torture. Anyways, next topic. Dan, that can't be true. Here's a story about, I have a link to a story about a father in Japan who left his 7-year-old son alone on a trail as he climbed Mount Fuji with his other kids. This story and the other story, you know, link I have about the grandmother leaving her baby, her granddaughter, leaving the baby in the car and the baby dies. There have been a lot of these stories popping up, folks, and they all kind of connect to the story that we will touch, because I don't really want to, but we will touch, involving that Lindsay woman. But you got to be careful. I'm not saying these aren't true stories, but there are these stories popping up in the last few weeks about parents just completely disregarding safety or concern for their kids. So look into it deeper if you want to. Okay, so I don't know if I want to talk about this. I was going to spend some time on it the other day and make it the sole topic of a podcast. And I'm not going to read much in terms of articles here. I have a link to a biography and information about Alasdair MacIntyre. And if you listen to my podcast, you know I've mentioned him in the past because he's a philosopher of ethics. He wrote a book called After Virtue, which I can highly recommend. And of anybody who's dealt with the moral decline of the West, I personally think he's come the closest. And it does have to do with the fact that the very structures that were part of, you know, moral behavior and ethical discourse and discussion and reality, they've been outsourced. They've been abstracted. Again, government is augmented reality. You know, there's a poor person right down the street. You don't need to bring your friend over with a pile of meat because they can go on a special card. They can get a special check. We'll just take your taxes and we'll help the friend down the street. Isn't that neat? But what I would argue is that the problem of outsourcing moral conduct, even if you think it's better, I don't think it is better. I don't think the outcomes are better than voluntary help, and I don't think that it's better for the person doing the help. But even if you did believe that the government is the best way to help the poor and to help the indigent and the orphans and the strangers, if you think the government is the best way to help the old people, even if you think that's true, that part of us as a society and culture that used to make it intrinsic to our values becomes atrophied. We no longer know how to do the right things, to behave the right way. What if, and I'm going to ask this question right now and then we can return to it, but what if nearly all the angst about Lindsay Clancy is about projection, is about the fact that in general, we all kind of know at this point that we're all kind of shitty adults and that we have not been looking out for the children. And if you do say, well, Dan, we shouldn't be isolationist, great, Mega Man, then include the kids of Gaza and the West Bank, include all those murdered children and ask yourself, how do you stand? Do you stand on the side of the children or do you stand on the side of those murdering the children, AKA the Israeli Defense Forces? I don't think men have to stay quiet on this issue, but I do think we all have to accept responsibility. I don't know any more than you do about the relationship between Lindsay and her husband in terms of the kids. You know, if you don't know the case, I don't recommend you look into it because I think it's just a lot of garbage. I'm not even sure it's not an op on some level. But again, if you want to pretend Lindsay Clancy is this year's George Floyd, but for women, that's fine. She had postpartum depression. She sent out warnings to lots of people, warnings to psychiatrists, warnings to her husband, to friends that she needed help and that she might even be a danger. So the one thing everyone seems to agree on is that she let people know she was going crazy. And so if you're going to place blame, and I agree, place blame on Lindsay, but if you're going to place blame, why don't you recognize the fact that a lot of adults in that room who should have been looking out for the baby were not? And there's people say, well, no, there was a caretaker helping and all this other stuff. What do you really know about that caretaker? What do you know about the quality of babysitting and child support, the people that work in that industry generally? You may not know more than me, which is zero. Okay, there might be good people out there who take care of kids, and there might be crap heads who simply take a check. And I'm thinking most are the latter, not the former. If in fact the PPD, the postpartum depression and psychosis, and the mismanagement of her medications led to this event, then there was also a husband who knew that she was dangerous and that she was saying these things. And I don't know. I think a lot of people will say things that are over the top on purpose because they don't want to recognize the simple fact that if you're the husband of somebody and your wife, your significant other is saying they're afraid they're going to harm the kids, that's a giant red flag. You don't just simply sit on that. And I feel like everybody in her life, to include her husband, based upon the narrative, again, based on the narrative, it seems like a cooked up narrative, just like George Floyd. But if you want to get suckered by a trauma monkey, it seems like based on the narrative, everybody agrees that she warned everybody. If you're the husband and your wife tells you that she's afraid she's going to harm your kids, you don't wait a day. You don't wait an hour. You act at that moment. And if that means separating your wife from the kids for a week or two, guess what? That's what you have to do. If that means you have to take time off from work, you do. And guess what? If that impacts your life as a worker, welcome to the United States of Stalinistic America, you jackass. Because everybody goes through it. You're not alone. If you think our society values family, you're a shithead. If you think Trump values family, you're an even bigger shithead. And I don't know how the insurance companies behave. I had a rough couple years, 2016, 2017, about a decade ago. And they were really rough. And at one time, I voluntarily told a family member who worked in the healthcare industry, I said, you know, would it be possible to get a room at the inn being the psych ward at the hospital? And they told me point blank 10 years ago, there really were no beds. People will just crap, scream, shit on their pants and in their letters all day long spew garbage about all the crazy homeless people and why can't it be like it used to be. Unless you intend to create a concentration camp, you can't afford to put these people into a room. You can't. You can't afford the medications. You can't afford the room. And frankly, if you think things are bad enough on the streets the way they are, imagine what happens when Big Pharma starts experimenting. So I don't know. I think the Lindsay Clancy case is, it's a lot of projection, a lot of narrative bending, and a lot of astroturf. A lot of these protests look way too prepared and ready to go for these protests to be altogether that organic. And like I talked to some students last year when we were talking about the issue generally, you can go online and you can rent a crowd. You can rent people. There are websites all over the place that rent people. Should it be illegal? I don't know. Should it be illegal for a restaurant to hire people to pretend to be in a line to go to the restaurant when it's opening? Again, folks, I can't tell you with certainty if that should be illegal because, well, I don't really believe in that sort of thing. I kind of think we should have a free society and let the stupid assholes be taken care of by reality and not by a legislative process. But if you believe in the rule of law, should it be legal for people to hire crowds? Because I can tell you straight up, a lot of these groups, and I saw them close up in 2020 in Seattle, they're synthetic, they're fake as fuck, they're rubber cone brigades. Next topic. Anyways, I got, you know, a few links in there about the Lindsey Clancy stuff if you want to go deeper into it. I don't know. I have a Tartaria kind of like, I don't know how to put it. I don't want to talk about Tartaria. And I have a couple of things about, okay, so let's have an honest conversation about my darkness. I have mostly, since I was a kid, believed I was leaving and I was living in a time that could be best described as an age of decline. And, you know, I grew up during the 70s, and the 70s had a lot of economic darkness for a lot of people. If you were a family that lived off of logging or fishing back in the 1970s in Washington State, the next decade or so would be hard, and a lot of your economic reality would shift so much that it would leave wreckage. You know, people joke that Aberdeen, Washington has been in a recession for 20, 30, 40 years, since the 80s, since the 70s, 50 years, and it's a joke, and it's not a joke. There are parts of Washington State that never, ever recovered from the changes that happened in the 70s and 80s with respect to fishing and logging. Now, we can debate whether those changes had to occur, but I need to accept the fact that I was living in that space when those things were happening. So if you want to argue, well, Dan, that's your own local experience of things, that could be 100% the case. I did not believe when I was a kid the end was tomorrow. When I was 20 years old, I had the spooky experience. I did competitive debate and public speaking in college, and I think we were at a university in Oregon, and I was sitting by some reflecting pool reading the Confessions of St. Augustine. And there's this one section, again, St. Augustine was a Roman who lived in, I believe, the late 4th, early 5th century AD, mid 5th century AD. He lived between the 4th and 5th century AD. He lived to see the collapse of the Western Roman Empire. He lived in the last decades of the Western Roman Empire. And he talked about that experience in the Confessions, and I don't know how to put it, but at that moment I had the sense, this is what this feels like. This is what this feels like right now. I don't have better words for it. Reading those words, it felt as if a book like that could have been written, but instead of, you know, in the 5th century, it could have been written at the end of the 20th century. I think some events in my life changed this a bit. I think being married, it's hard to be married and to have the outlook I've had on life and make those two things work. But by the time we got to the great financial crisis, again, jobs, careers, everything in the rearview mirror, some time in the army, a lot of the things I'd believed in just started falling apart. And then what was worse is there was so much propaganda coming from every direction in 2008 and 2009. Specifically, a lot of garbage, like, oh, you remember Oath Keepers? That was garbage. That was never going to do anything. But they were right there, ready to go. Just like Occupy Wall Street, just like the frickin' tax revolt of 2009, whatever. It was all there to co-opt the people who were upset and angry. It was all there, ready to go, so that people who were upset about the situation would have a place to just sit down and say, okay, I can just be here for a while. And then what? Nothing. And then we get to 2020. And I don't want to oversimplify, but in 2019, I had the sense that the world was tipping over and that what I thought my whole life was coming was almost here. Folks, it's been like that ever since 2021 for me. I think that I'm crazy is the best thing that you can hope for. If you need to believe this is just going to be another recession, that's fine. If you need to believe this is just going to be a depression, that's your lane. If you need to believe a magical super government is going to take over with who knows what resources and diesel fuel, awesome. If you need to believe your beliefs have zero consequences, well, the universe is heading for your door. And this is a little bit of stealing from Ayn Rand. You know, she said something similar to this. And I would agree with her statement about consequences. You can't avoid them. You can believe whatever nonsense you want to believe, folks. I can too. But then there's just the reality right outside my door. If a young person asks me, what should I do? I tell them today what I told people 10 fucking years ago. And I'll tell young people today, try to find a career where you can keep your feet in both worlds. So many engineering disciplines, not software, but many engineering disciplines, if you want to go to college, I definitely think becoming a nurse practitioner or a physician's assistant is a better choice than becoming a doctor. And those are skills that could allow you to essentially become the local doctor if things tip over. There are lots of jobs where you can do the job and you can still kind of get ready for what could happen. Because I don't think it's the end of the world, folks, but I do think things are going to get so crazy that it will feel like it for many people. And I don't think I'm prepared for it. I don't think likely you're prepared for it. We can all talk with a lot of bravado. But I just don't think, I think it's such a completely different reality that's coming that even talking about it is kind of absurd. And it doesn't mean we shouldn't try to prepare, but to quote myself from 2014, a lot of this is like changing seats on an airplane. You're on the poop cruise, baby. Captain Trump, he's taking us on a trip. You're on the poop cruise. The toilets are backed up. You're on the poop cruise. Your aircraft carrier can't wash your clothes. You're on the poop cruise. A toxic train crashes in your town. Dumps a lot of poison into the water. You're on the poop cruise. Oh, you had to get a vaccine shot for who knows what. Welcome to the poop cruise. You're gonna shoot the poop into yourself or shoot it into your kids because you're on the poop cruise. You're gonna take a coffee filter covered in fecal matter. You'll wear it on your face each day because you're on the poop cruise. It is August the 25th, 2026. Crazy times. I have some links to some stuff about Klaus Kinski. If you've never seen his Jesus Christ Savior stand-ups, there's some stuff on YouTube. I don't know where the raw, raw, raw video is. This is kind of like a collection of clips from his little stand-up he did about essentially playing the part of Jesus as really claiming he's kind of like the return of Jesus. But the bottom line is it's hilarious. And if you understand the culture of post-World War II Western Germany, it kind of is, if you're a student of history who studies modern contemporary European history, specifically the Cold War period, specifically West Germany, this is stuff that's like important because a lot of the angst in the audience and a lot of the people who enjoyed it is an expression of where the psyche of the German people was at. So anyways, if you want to, I have a link to the video. I think you'll enjoy it. I don't really make enough money to keep this podcast going. And at some point, it won't be a miracle or an accident. I simply won't be able to do it. Just the blog alone cost me about $700 a year, $800 in fees. And that's variable because it depends upon the fees and they go up. All the other resources are more or less paid for. But if I had to replace like microphones, recording devices, and other tools, I simply don't have the money to do it. And I'm saying all this because this is all irrelevant. None of this applies to the world that's coming, and none of it is necessarily relevant to your life. This is why I have always, when I ask for donations, waited till the end, because chances are at the end, who the fuck am I talking to? Maybe nobody. I don't have any illusions about this podcast. Could it do better? Could it do worse? Folks, we're in the same poop cruise. And on the poop cruise, there are certain people that are going to get heard, and other people will simply, you know, be told to go to the poop deck. Okay. But if you have resources, which means you've taken care of food, water, shelter, you've taken care of your bills, you've taken care of people in your life you care about, you've taken care of, you know, yourself in terms of providing some cushion. I think just about everybody should have a couple months worth of food and water on hand. Sorry. And it needs to be food you can eat with very little work. I know that's the gross kind, the toxic kind. I think people can. So if you do your own canning and jarring, you can make it healthy. But you need to have about a couple months at least. And a couple months isn't going to buy you much, but it might buy you the time to come up with a basic plan if you don't have one. We don't really know what to plan for because we really don't know what kind of bullshit is coming down the pike. But if you've done all these things and you're saying to yourself, Dan, I want to spend money because it's burning a hole in my sphincter. Can you take the money from me and spend it for me? And the answer is I can, because like I said, I am more or less in the hole on the podcast. I am not making money off of it. There was a brief time in late 2019 where I kind of made money off the podcast. A little, not much. Not much since then. It's been pretty bad since 2020. And what's funny is I did a lot of interviews in 2020, and that shit came back to haunt me, in my opinion, too. So anywho, to get back to the topic, if you want to donate, you can. Make sure you've taken care of the things you need to take care of first. And if you want to, there's a link to PayPal. It's a new link. It's a link with the same ID that I'm trying to use across platforms, and that's Gingerbread. But the link's in the notes, so you just have to click on it. And you don't have to. And you have a great rest of your fantastic Tuesday on the good ship.